Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super-duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border, coast to coast, and all the ships at sea. Streaming live from the County of Kings, Brooklyn, New York City, on the Heritage Radio Network. Are you ready for the fastest half hour on the internet today? It's the Mike and Judy Show, spanning the globe for high-minded hijinks and lowbrow kicks to bring you the best in sex, drugs, rock and roll, and nuclear fission. They're too bad for radio and too good-looking for television. And now, here they are, the Nichols and May of the Now Generation, your hosts, Mike Edison and Judy McGuire.
Welcome to the third mic-free episode of the Mike and Judy Show. So it's the Judy and Janet Show today. Welcome, Janet Ginsburg.
That's right. Thank you.
You are looking lovely today.
Why, thank you, Judy. You as well.
Thank you. Janet is a friend of mine. She's a writer. She's hilarious, which means perform, little monkey, perform.
I know what it means. All right.
And we're welcoming the ladies of Bust Magazine today as they celebrate their 20th anniversary. Woo! Congratulations. So when you were starting this magazine, Lori and Debbie, you guys started it. Lori Hensel and Debbie Stoller. We've got Emily Remsen here, the managing editor for the past 12 years. Did you ever think you'd see your 20-year anniversary?
No. Absolutely not. I think it was just, when we first started it, it was kind of like, a hobby, sort of a fun idea. And once we started to have a little bit of success, we wanted to grow and take over the world. But I never thought that far in the future, you know, and never really thought that it was going to do anything.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I don't think I really looked far in the future either. We had pretty big ideas, you know, big dreams for this thing, even when it was a little piece of nothing. And I know
it was never a little piece of nothing.
Yeah, at the beginning, it was a little piece of nothing. I mean, it was a fun and silly nothing, but it was still just a little Xerox and stapled thing. That back then, we were just like, oh my God, if this could just be our job, if we could just give up our day jobs, and this could just be our full-time job. And that's only as far as I could see back then. Now, when it did become our full-time job, I didn't think of getting to 20, but I also didn't think of not getting to 20.
Yeah. Well, was there one early event that you can remember where you guys were like, oh, we have to do this? Or was it just like kind of kicked it around and it seemed like a good idea?
I always wanted to keep going because I am a Leo that's very bossy.
Yes.
I don't like to be told what to do.
You don't seem bossy at all.
But no, and so because Debbie and I are our own bosses, I think that's, you know, it's nice to, it's hard, but it's also nice. And the thought of, I can't imagine myself working anywhere else at this point.
Like, or working for anyone else.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like working for another company. It would just, we've been doing it for so long. I can't. It would be weird. It'd be really weird.
I mean, so many magazines have gone out of business in the last 10 years. I mean, what do you guys think is the sort of the secret to your success?
If they told you.
Yeah, exactly. We'd have to kill you.
And everyone would be doing it.
Unfortunately, one of the secrets is that we're super stubborn and
cheap.
And very cheap. We aren't able to pay anybody what they're worth, which is really unfortunate. The fortunate thing so far is that people enjoy working on this project enough that some people are willing to, you know, like poor Emily here has been willing, and ourselves, been willing to make the sacrifice to stick with it, and the trade-off being you're getting to put together something that's pretty cool.
But, I mean, you guys, the difference between you guys and a lot of publications is, like, when someone writes for you, they know you don't have much money, and it's okay to write for you for a little bit of money. When, like, someone, some big corporate entity is trying to lowball you, it's frustrating.
Right. Because, I mean, then they have the money, and they just don't want to pay you because they're cheap.
But yeah.
Well, but, I mean, so big corporate entities, though, they spend tons of money making their magazines, tons. And as a result, if the magazine isn't bringing in tons of money or more so that there's a profit, they're going to shut it down. We definitely have plenty of struggles, especially recently, but we're not spending tons of money, so we have a little bit of more room to, you know, to play with.
It looks awesome. If it doesn't cost a lot, I mean, that's a good-looking magazine.
Yeah, it's a great-looking magazine, and it's got really great writers. I mean, you have Roseanne as your advice columnist. Who got that one involved?
Roseanne got herself involved. Weirdly enough, we interviewed Roseanne way, way, way back in, like, issue number 8 or something. And then she had a TV show for a little while, and we got to go on there when we had our first bust book out, which was a long time ago. But, yeah, so her agent basically wrote to us and said, like, Roseanne just wrote an article for a newspaper, and she really likes writing. She'd like to keep doing it. Can she write something for you? And then we were like, well, maybe it would be cool to ask her to do an advice column.
Yeah, because she's, speaking of bossy, like, she's pretty bossy.
Oh, yeah.
Emily, what do you love about working there? I mean, you weren't one of the founders, but you've been there for 12 years. I mean, that's forever in the employment market.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I my favorite thing is just the feeling that I have a sense of personal integrity with what I do with my time.
That, like, what is crazy?
What does that feel like?
I know.
We're wondering right now.
We really don't know.
Because, you know, if you're a creative person and you're looking for a job that will actually, like, utilize your brain and your skills, you know, there's a lot of ways to go about that in New York, but a lot of them seem kind of soul-sucking and sad when you get involved in it, which is the kind of job that I was doing first when I first moved to New York. And it was that kind of job where I thought it was going to be like a great creative use of my brain and my time. And I would spend every lunch hour crying, locked in the bathroom, reading Bust magazine. Like, that is what I did at my job before Bust. So, like, once the whole, I was able to intern and stay on, like, it just seemed like a dream come true. And I never wanted to let it go. I feel like it's such a good use of my time and my brain and my talent to make something that I believe actually makes the world better. Like, I'm not going to knock marketing or whatever, but I'm not selling cars with my time.
Or worse.
That's what keeps me.
Trust me.
Sell than cars.
Since I moved here, I cannot believe the number of stories I've heard about people crying in the restroom at their jobs. It's like, it's a common phenomenon in New York for people to go into the bathroom, burst into tears, and go back to work.
I used to try to take naps in the bathroom. and I heard that they've engineered. No, at my other job, not at Bust. At Bust, I could just lie down. At my other jobs, when I was a lot younger and maybe had a wild night the night before. So I tried a nap at my job. And I'm sure that they engineer the bathroom stalls so that the toilet paper roll is just far enough away that you can't lay your head on it. I really do think that that's engineered that way.
Sadistic.
If it was just a little closer, you could totally just have a little nap.
That's probably someone's job, designing the stall.
The nap-free toilet stall.
I wanted to ask you guys, so this has been around for 20 years. How has what you covered changed, or has it changed, or is it still pretty consistent? What have you noticed over that time?
At its core, we're still doing the same thing, which is pop culture informed by feminism. You know, we want to showcase cool women doing cool things. But when we first started, I think I feel like the main focus was being very sex positive, like telling girls, like, you need to have an orgasm when you're having sex. Like, don't just go fuck a guy and have him come and nothing happens to you. Like, that's not good.
Or worse, those girls were just giving blowjobs.
Right, like, whoa, what's in it for me? So yeah. we were surprised that so many women had never had orgasms, and we were like, okay, there's this thing called a vibrator. And so for many years, there was a lot of sex stories, and people loved that, obviously. And then we kind of were, after like maybe 10 years of that, we were like, oh God, not another sex story. Like, please.
So boring.
So we still have sex in bus, tons of it, but we kind of hide it in the back. And now, you know, then there was a while where, you know, we were doing a lot of the crafting stuff, which Debbie can talk about. So, you know, it does sort of, there are sort of themes that work in and out. I would say that's the biggest difference. Although we do still have sex. We play hide the sausage with it. We put it in the back of the magazine instead of putting it in the front.
Oh, here it is. Yes. I'm looking at a copy right now for everyone in Radioland. And yes, on page 79.
There it is.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden
Sex
Sausage.
Files.
Yeah.
There's the feminism thing. Have you noticed? I'm kind of disturbed by how many women are refusing to be called feminists now. Have you noticed this change in the 20 years? Or,
you know, that has always been the case, that women don't want to call themselves feminists. However, I think that we would have hoped to be in a pop culture place where we are now. So many things have become better. I mean, I think you have people like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, very popular, very well known, very comfortable with calling themselves feminist. They have been, I think, somewhat a driving force in pop culture. They present an image of being a woman that a lot of us can identify with. And really, there was nothing like that. I mean, Roseanne was out there, you know, really trying to work the feminist angle in her shows. You know, maybe people thought that, but to have some young women
funny, unlike the rest of us humorless feminists.
You know, and there's like a, I don't know if you guys have seen Amy Schumer's show, and I don't know if she calls herself a feminist. We had her in the magazine. I don't know, but her show on Comedy Central is the kind of thing that we would have proposed 20 years ago as like a joke. Like, wouldn't it be cool if there was a show like this? She's very, it's very outspoken about sex, and it's very funny. It's very much from a girl's perspective, and it's really, I think it's really great. So I think things have changed in the popular culture. People are always going to be afraid to call themselves feminists because feminism is always going to have there's always a backlash. So people are always going to try to present it as a terrible thing.
But Susan Sarandon, of all people.
What? No way.
Yeah, she just came out saying she was not a feminist.
She just came out of the closet as a non-feminist.
As a non-feminist.
After everybody assumed that she was a feminist all these years.
That's rude.
After years of banging younger men.
I feel like she didn't say that to us. Something happened. What's going on with her?
She got hit.
Does anybody know what's going on? Susan, call us.
Well, it is frustrating that people still do that. And when we ask, you know, all the time in our interviews, and it's always heartbreaking when someone that you really admire, like PJ Harvey.
I was like Patti Smith. That broke my heart in 1,000 pieces, I think.
I mean, Patti, I get it. I get it with her.
That's like the artsy, like, I'm a humanist, I'm not a feminist, like, I'm for all people. I think Bjork said that too. It's a very musician kind of answer.
I have to say, I am a feminist, but I do think of myself as a humanist first, because I think, for me, that's part of the problem, you know, is that if you have to, like, call it out. But that's also the reality of what world we live in now, is like, well, you have to be a feminist. You can't just be a humanist, because that's not, I don't know, that doesn't seem to make full sense. But, I mean, I understand where people are coming from when they say that, you know.
I don't
Using it
all.
As a way to deny your feminism, when your whole life seems to be based on feminist principles, I find confusing and sad.
Well, I think it's weird. That's what I was saying. I think it's weird when you deny it with that. Like, I think it can be inclusive.
Feminism?
But
it's all cool now.
Yeah, that's not true.
I don't want to insult you, but
I'm ready.
But that whole humanism thing is like, you know, sometimes maybe when you're a kid, there was some bully, and you're like, you know, I don't like that guy. He did this really mean thing. And they're like, he's never been mean to me. I mean, I think humanism is what? You think that everybody's valuable.
I think everybody has to be treated like they're valuable.
Right.
But that's why I'm saying, for me, it doesn't discount feminists. I would call myself a feminist, but I also call myself a humanist. It's like when people
who's not a humanist?
I think a lot of
Rick Perry, not a humanist.
Yeah.
Rick Santorum, not a humanist.
I mean, one of the things that I do think is important about feminism is that you both think that, you know, men and women are of equal value, but also that you think that things are not yet set up that way in the world.
Right. It's right.
A variety of different levels. And so you have your eyes open to that.
Right. And I agree with that. Absolutely. Which is why I was saying, like, I still call myself a feminist, but I think I also consider my, I hope for the day when everyone can just call themselves a humanist, but I don't think we live in that world yet.
No. I still don't understand. I mean, I guess some of the people that we spoke to thought that feminism means that you think girls are better. Girls rule and boys drool.
Well,
that's
kind of true.
but that's what it means when Judy says it.
Speaking of unabashed feminists, we're going to hear a new song from the Julie Ruin, Kathleen Hanna's new band. It's called Oh Come On, and it's from the new record Run Fast. Love that song, and I'm so grateful to Girly Action for arranging it for us to be able to play it. So anyway, speaking of Kathleen Hanna, she's going to be at your 20th anniversary party.
Yay. I think so, yeah. It's coming up on July 25th at the Bell House.
And who else is going to be
well,
there?
Performing, we have Chibo Matto, mm-hmm. and our hostess is Julie Klausner.
Funny.
Very funny. We have Harmar Superstar is going to do a couple songs. We have some other funny ladies.
Aquafina.
Broad City. Jesse Klein. Vanessa Bayer.
So it's star-studded.
Yeah, it's going to be good. And appearances by. Well, so we decided to do this thing called the Golden Bra, where we give an award to someone who's very, very special to us. So I guess I'm allowed to say it, right? A couple people have agreed to come accept their awards, one of them being the Gloria Steinem.
Oh, my God.
Nice. Major. Heard of her. And Kathleen is going to accept
Kathleen Hanna.
Who else? Liz Winstead.
Jean Grey.
Amber Tamblyn. I feel like I'm forgetting someone, but
probably. Yeah. Me too.
But anyway, I think it's going to be a great night.
Jonathan
Tobin's going to do some DJing at end. Oh, and J.D. Sampson is also DJing too.
So. Oh, cool. Yeah. Jonathan Tobin, who came back from the dead practically.
I know.
And can anyone get tickets? Are tickets available online?
Tickets are available at the Bell House.
But there's a couple different levels
cupcakes,
of tickets.
Of course.
Of course.
There are. Yes. And there's going to be goodie bags for people who come. I mean, it's going to be a pretty fun thing. It's going to be like Night of a Thousand Ladies.
Yeah, too bad, Julie, you're not going to be around for it.
Yeah. Well,
maybe you have to change your plans.
What are you doing, Julie?
Kansas City. I'm going to be in a glamorous... You know what? I think I might be back by that day. I have to check my schedule again because I'm going to be 4 days in Kansas City writing about jeans. Because I live the glamorous life. See, there's worse things than cars. So you guys really throw great events, and you guys do the Craftacular. How many times a year? Like twice a year?
Gosh, three times, four. It depends. We do them in London now, so sometimes those happen two times. We do it three times in the States. We do it in the spring, in the fall, and at holiday time.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. It's just a way to, like, I don't know. It's a fun shopping event where a lot of artists come and sell their stuff. So it's all handmade things, cool jewelry, and all kinds of crafty things.
It's actually really cool for us to even see that this kind of thing is possible. I mean, it's pretty organic to the magazine for us to be doing a Craftacular. It makes sense. We started writing about crafts quite a while ago, and in 2000 we came out with this Homegirls issue in which we kind of came out as women who enjoyed, like, some of the domestic arts, cooking and crafting, and in that magazine we had a story about, I don't know if you can handle this, but you're probably not going to believe tell what I'm about more. To tell you.
We like anything that starts that way.
Four women, they make stuff and they sell it online.
That's crazy.
And they, yeah. Isn't that wild?
That's nuts.
Anyway, so back then, that was
pre-Etsy, I'm assuming.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, so it's really great to see that there's been such an explosion in that little, in that handmade type of market. It's mostly women. I mean, Etsy is made of girls. I know that it's run by boys, but yeah. And there are, of course, crafty men. There's always crafty men at our Craftacular, but really this whole DIY movement, I feel like, has really been fueled by girl hands.
Definitely. And, you know, the craft thing is always great because, unlike some other craft fairs where you get a whole bunch of tote bags with, like, you know, a bird printed on them or something, there's a big variety, and I always get most of my Christmas presents there too. What do you guys have coming up for the next 20 years of Bust?
Ooh, insightful.
I know. I didn't even write that one
hard
down.
Hard hitting.
Emily, maybe.
I just want us to keep on trucking. Like, there's no. You would think that after doing this, like, issue after issue, you would run out of cool girls doing cool things.
No.
But you just never, ever do. And it's so awesome that we never will ever run out of cool girls doing cool things to celebrate.
Debbie, your interview with Courtney Love in this issue was so good. And, I mean, she kind of frightens me a little. She seemed like she might have put you off a little, too. Am I completely off out of...
I'm a huge fan of Courtney. I've been a fan of hers for a really long time, and it was really, really exciting to interview her. But so I had all these questions that I wanted to ask, you know, all these things that I really wanted to get into that I knew she'd have really smart opinions on. But she's like a railroad train. Like, you just have to get out of the way and let her do her thing. And, you know, she's very open. She's very honest. She's, I think what's so beautiful about her, really, is that she's still, like, just a punk rock girl. Like, she, even though with all of the fancy clothes and the designer this and stuff like that, she's still, like, will, you know, pee with the door open, or, you know, and I like that. I mean, I think that, like, mainstream people would maybe be offended by that. I think that's crazy, but I like that she's, like, real and earthy and girly, and
I love
she's
the part.
So smart, she really is.
The part where you guys went to let her meditate and she was texting at the temple.
Yeah.
Did you get any feedback from her? Was she pissed that you wrote that or anything?
I haven't heard.
We haven't heard anything. Probably.
That's a good thing then.
I figured if she hated it, she would have let us know. I don't know.
Who's your dream get? Who would you like? I mean, you have Janelle Monáe in the next cover, or
yes. Janelle? Yes.
We've been trying for Dolly Parton for such a long time.
What's up with
that? Such a long time.
They're like, oh yeah, we're going to do this, and then it never happens.
And for a while, it was Courtney Love. I think we were trying for Courtney as long as we were trying for Dolly. And so
we've had a lot of close encounters with Courtney in the past where she would be like, okay, yeah, let's do this, and then it would just never happen. But so that was good. Debbie wants to interview Madonna.
Oh, that would be great.
It would be great. I bet she's really mean, though.
I bet.
She doesn't have to be nice.
That's true.
She's done so much. I feel like she's
nice
done so
overrated.
Much for us.
Hard-working lady. She works hard. Mm-hmm. She does not have time for a lot of niceties.
Pleasantries.
Yeah. She's busy working.
Emily, who would you like?
Well, Dolly, definitely. I would like to see her on the cover. There's, you know, I want to see, I want Hillary Clinton to be the president, and I want her to do her first, like, cover as president to be the best cover.
Yes, that would be awesome.
That would be awesome. I don't see that happening, though. Like, she's too carefully controlled. Like
a girl can dream.
Yeah. Yeah. What about announcing her candidacy on Bust? I mean,
I know, right? That's what we should try to
do. That'd be something.
Come on, girl.
That would guarantee that she would lose the election.
Because she's a feminazi libtard. Yeah, exactly. That would seal her fate. Okay, so you guys have the issue on the sedans now has Courtney Love on the cover. You've got a party coming up.
A star-studded.
Star-studded. And there's also these exciting VIP tickets I noticed.
Yeah. Those are for the extra special people. Special,
for the extra money.
Special people club. Right. Want to spend the support Bust.
How can people best support Bust? I know that I used to buy it on the newsstand until I spoke with Debbie and found out the real deal. Maybe you want to talk a little bit about that?
No.
Well, the economics of magazine publishing is super boring. But the reason that most magazines can offer subscriptions for less money than what it costs on the newsstand is because when you subscribe, the magazine gets all of that money that you're paying, and we have it in time to use it to pay for printing bills and stuff like that. When you buy a magazine on the newsstand dealer gets a cut of what you're paying, then there's a distributor who gets the thing to the newsstand. Sometimes there's even another layer of person. The accounting for that takes a really long time, so we don't see that money that you spent. I mean, we could be out of business by the time we see that money that you spent. We can't, you know, we need to
it like
now, and it's
subscribe.
A very small portion. So subscribe, subscribe, subscribe.
Also, yeah. I would say advertise with us. Like, hello, if you have a small business, and then take out an ad. They're not even expensive.
Yeah, you'll work with somebody, right?
Yeah, of course. You know, it's tough. You know, people don't want to spend money, and we need subscribers and advertisers to survive. That's just the bottom line. So hopefully, we'll have some still.
So we say, don't let us sag.
Yeah, don't let us sag.
Support Bust.
Yes, it's very important to support Bust. You can find it at bust.com. You guys have a vibrant community there, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I want to thank you guys for coming in and celebrating your 20th anniversary with me and Janet and pizza.
Yay, thank you.
Nice. Thanks so much, and we'll see you on Thursday. Yeah. Thanks, Jack.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, the French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.